2010, 2012, where all of life shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And the cell phone is a big, big part of that. She gives such great, clear, concrete research on the spiking of mental health issues. Phone first, COVID second.
Mm-hmm.
And together, that was like an atom bomb of mental health. So I see that so much with the families, with the couples and their children, sometimes stuck in that age, like 13 to 20 window where they just can't find themselves. They can't individuate. They can't feel, you know, Erickson's stages of identity and strength of person. And so, yes, it's impacted everybody. It's traumatic. It's unstabling. And so how do we find that? How do we move forward? I think that's what we're talking about.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
And that's why we want to focus on this more coming up. Our listeners will start to hear us dive into this a lot more specifically.
Welcome to Love and Life. I'm Dr. Karen Anderson-Abril here with my co-host,
Pastor Elliot Anderson.
And Love and Life is your place to hear conversations grounded in psych research, psychotherapy,
and biblical truth
to help us thrive in love and life. All right, Elliot, we're going to take a quick break from your premarital curriculum to talk about something that's been on my mind. Post-COVID, I mean, I think it's a PTSD kind of thing, actually. I'm being a bit hyperbolic, but not really.
I don't think so. In fact, in my trauma and crisis class, I introduced the principle, and then we went and found some research. Of course, I don't have it at the moment, but we can find it and get up the link. We went and talked about COVID itself universally was traumatic. It was a traumatic event for the whole world. So there's PTSD elements or ripples throughout.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in our field, there's been a greater appreciation that trauma is not just if you were in a war and in combat. There's many, sadly, many ways to experience trauma. And this is a collective trauma that people experienced worldwide. And certainly depending on in the U.S., which state you were in, those lockdowns lasted a whole lot longer. School closures a whole lot longer from state to state. Some of the states were a little bit more, okay, we'll lock down for a bit here this 2 weeks, and then we'll try to get back in gear. I'm curious, and I'm asking this of our community, and I'd love to hear from them, because I think for many of us, now I'm speaking for people who experienced it from my angle, which, as you know, and our community knows, I would be very appropriately labeled a COVID dissident.
Sure.
Meaning that the procedures, the laws, the mandates, certainly I disagreed with all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe the first 2 weeks, people like, we don't know what's going on. Yeah. I can give them a beat to kind of get their bearings. But after that, for me, I don't see my country or my world in the same way anymore.
Yeah.
And certainly not many of the things that I was already skeptical because of dad.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly pharma was never our friend in our household growing up in the 70s and 80s. And I am even more firmly furious / disappointed / skeptical of pharma, which relates certainly to mental health.
And ultimately super concerned.
Yes.
Right, for self and others.
My fury
so it's not
is
all
because
individualistic, I'm saying.
Well, no, it is about me, of course. No, it's but it because as professionals, I feel this very strong urgency to sound the alarm.
Yeah.
And that can be because COVID unfortunately got politicized, which also makes me think, well, who decided it had to be a left-right thing? It should have brought us together. Other tragedies in our country that we remember, 9/11, for example, we came together more so. This one polarized us. And then I feel that I, having had the time to listen and dig and do the research, a lot of people didn't. They had little kids at home. They have to, now they're homeschooling their kids or Zoom schooling their kids. I had the luxury and the blessing of some time. And I do feel as a professional, this urgency to let people know that a lot of what we take for truth is not. And that feels, unfortunately, it feels that when I want to share things like that, it can often be seen as, there's Karen again, she's up on her soapbox. Mm-hmm. And then that feels personally difficult. So basically, I'm asking for some therapy.
Yeah, and I think you're hitting on two points here that are really collectively understood, even if we have different responses or different time, like you said, that you had to actually sink into being a dissident.
Yeah.
Right, so how we respond to those traumatic events and what your household was like, I had all four of my kids home and a foster child completely out of control.
Right.
So for my lockdown, it was chaos. Four, including myself,
yeah,
seriously hyperactive oppositional boys in the house.
Right.
So it was literally just trying to get through each way. But if I didn't have opportunities then to get out and do construction work, because it was interesting how no one cared about COVID when it came to construction contracts. Me and my partner got tons of work.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, well, this is interesting. Mm-hmm. If we're going out and do it this way, we're fine. But back to the main point. So how we responded that traumatic event makes a big difference. I had that freedom to get out of my chaotic house and actually make some money still and feel like a man, feel out there producing and providing made a big difference. But the whole context you're talking about is it does, you know, we also know trauma is subjective. And so for some people, they can actually say, and I've heard couples say this, and particularly COVID was good for us.
Yeah.
Right. They were forced to be home and that ended up being helpful. Other people with domestic violence in the home, being forced home with your difficult husband or wife, not good. So there's subjectivity to it. There's environmental differences. But if we simply say COVID was just a difficult time, we're dismissing the significance of what it caused all of us. I heard it unsettled your foundations.
Oh,
right.
Totally.
Not just in the medical side, all of it. Right. It was a bunch of things that got unsettled. And as you're moving forward, like, how do I keep, how do I get my foundation back to its normal self? And yet make sure I'm championing the things that I now know are even of more concern to me and things that were in our family background, right? They wanted me on medicine. The classes, the teachers, the principals wanted me on hyperactivity medicine. And mom and dad said, no. I remember listening to dad argue with the principal and the dean, Pat Howard, a wonderful lady, right? Great lady.
She loved you.
Yeah. She was an awesome lady. And dad and her were arguing and he's like, no, I will not. So we have that in our background. And certainly with my own clients, I'm pretty clearly upfront. Prefer you not do it. I'm not, I'm not in charge of their lives, but let's talk about all the other angles and walk through that. So to have that kind of thrust into the forefront of everything now leaves it fairly unsettled.
Yeah. It's a worldview paradigm shift. And to your point, it's not that the pharma thing that was, of course. I mean, and that's the reason that the minute I remember watching on TV, they're like, we're going to get this vaccine out there. I look at Dan, I'm like, I'm not taking that.
Yeah. No, and Angie and I were the exact same.
I was like, we're not taking that.
There's no shot. There's like, we're not doing that. There's just no way there's going to be enough background information, understanding. We'd already fought the whole vaccine thing with our nephew.
Right.
We'd all been through that with our with our
nephew.
Which
is why your kids weren't on the CDC schedule of vaccines either.
None of them.
Right.
The kids didn't get not one. And it was interesting. Sometimes my kids were like, Dad, why don't we do that? And they were concerned. By the time COVID came out, my boys were like, thank you, Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Because I'm not doing this either. And I'm like, you don't do it. I'll support you 100%. We'll figure it out. I had to write special letters for Jacob and his baseball for his college coaches to accept him on scholarship and play in his teams. I had to write special letters and get the appropriate state things involved, right? That's all part of the process.
Well, it used to be you could have the religious exemption. I'm talking about your basic CDC childhood vaccination schedule, which for most public schools, I think they expect certain ones. Yeah, but you could get the religious exemption or the medical exemption if you'd had an allergic reaction to one in the past. And a lot of those exemptions, they tried to toss them. I think people stood their grounds, and in many cases, they were able to still have their kids exempt.
I used the religious one all the way through for all my kids, and it was accepted even though I got pushback.
Well, but okay, but let's talk about the fact that government workers and even contract workers, or what got real personal for us, and you know this, but our audience may not, that Dan bought into a business in November of 2021. This is right when Biden decides that he tried through OSHA to say that if any employer has more than 100 employees, they would have to they would have to mandate. So now he's moving from the public realm, which I think was still unconscionable because it's un-American to force someone just to either take an experimental shot or lose their job and the ability to provide for their family. But then he's moving to the private realm. And we had the very first Christmas party, he buys in November. This is all front and center. And I'm looking at Dan, I'm like, well, what are we going to do? Because we're not going to, we're not going to do it. So he's telling me, and his business partner had been jabbed. He just didn't have a big issue about it, but he wasn't, he did not, he was not for mandating it.
Right.
But he personally went ahead and
had
jabbed. Was that?
He had chosen.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't obviously as passionate about this as Dan and I were. And I looked at Dan, I'm like, well, we're not doing that. We can't. That's so against every fiber of our being. And Dan's like, well, maybe we'll split up the company into two, 50 here, 125 employees there. We'll redo the paperwork and make it two different companies. And I'm thinking, well, if it's 100 today and they push that through, when is it going to be 50? And then when is it going to be 10?
Yeah, or anybody.
And our first Christmas party, this young woman homeschools, has a little farm with the goats and the chickens. And she comes up to me and introduces herself and she's talking and I can tell she wants to say something. And eventually she asks me, she's like, Karen, Josh, her husband, has worked for this company for 9 years and we love this company. And I homeschool. We don't have any other income, but we're not going to get vaccinated. And if this mandate goes through, and if it hadn't gotten tossed by the Supreme Court in January, we would have been in that. So it got very personal. And so all this to say, I find that, and I'm curious if other people are too, I don't want this to be just about me, but I think it's very relevant that, so someone like us who was raised to be skeptical and critical thinkers and questioning. And so for, like I said, I was like, there's no way I would do this. This is Operation Warp Speed. That doesn't make any sense. You can't warp speed a drug that you're going to put in people's bodies. It's brand new, never been tested on people. You need 10 to 12 years of of longitudinal study and research. But for us to be skeptical and critical thinkers is one thing. But then to have where I feel my paradigm shift in the midst of dad being very much a critical thinker and inviting us and actually mandating in our home that we do the same. We also weren't raised to be cynical and to kind of see everyone is out to get you and you can't trust people and the world's a scary place because everyone's trying to get one over on you and force you to do things. And now I feel a little bit like that. I feel like I've lost some of my more natural optimism and enthusiasm. And I'm a little bit more like, what are they trying to do? What's his angle? Who's trying to make money over here? And so that's been hard for me.
Almost again, a little traumatic response.
Well,
a little PTSD response.
In the sense that
being attacked for your positions or for your convictions or what you know is truth and your research and your well-versed understanding of these things. You're not just flippantly talking about it. You do a lot of deep dives. You read a ton, listening to a ton. So when you're being attacked for the very thing that you know is a validation of self, that gets unsettling.
Yeah.
Right. And so then when we feel that as a country, or we feel that polarization within our classes, within our friends, within our communities, within our churches.
Families.
Right. All of it. It's really, really difficult. So I think that alone, that demarcation that happened through COVID and everything that went with it has left a lot of people in trauma response or trauma effect where it feels so unsettled. It's like, who am I now? How do I define myself moving forward? And maybe that's a part of what you're feeling.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
For sure.
So even on our podcast, how much do we focus this? How much do we focus on relationships? Doing both and trying to carry them both forward because they all apply. If it's not applied to relationship, what are we applying for, right? And that's my opinion. So we move it forward together, but to be vulnerable enough to admit, hey, this still stinks myself. I'm still wrestling through this is huge. And I'm not saying I don't wrestle through, it's just a different perspective, right? Because I'm so much into the direct care of people in crisis, the external crises, and maybe that's part of why I do it. The external crises are just kind of there and they float around me and I know they're there and they just don't sink in a whole lot. Not because I'm in denial,
no,
but because I'm so focused on these tangible in-place scenarios.
Well, as we know from locus of control research that focusing on things you can't control is a recipe for misery.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you are focusing on the couples
the
that come to
internal controls, the locus of the internal controls,
And so you're working with people who have come to you for assistance. You know you can, you have God-given gifts to help them. And so you focus on that. Some of the stuff where you're like, oh, I don't know what they're doing over in that lab over there, this bioweapon over here, I can't control it. Whereas I tend to go, all these things. And so probably make myself a little crazy. We want to take a moment to say a quick thank you to our community for supporting our sponsor, The Wellness Company. We've been so thrilled to partner with their team of esteemed medical professionals, including Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Harvey Risch, Dr. Drew Pinsky, and other truth-seeking doctors we can trust. Many of us are feeling some post-pandemic uncertainty, which makes perfect sense because now they're talking about this disease X that's supposedly about to break out at any time. But we can take charge of our health and prepare ourselves for natural disasters or man-made threats with the Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit. It's the ultimate safeguard for your family. The kit includes vital medications like ivermectin, amoxicillin, and Z-Pak, with a comprehensive guidebook researched and written by the company's chief medical board. Visit twc.health/lovelife and use promo code LOVELIFE for an exclusive 15% discount. That's twc.health/lovelife and promo code LOVELIFE, all one word, for 15% off your order. But getting back to relationships, this is something I've been wanting to talk to you about extensively. Mm-hmm. How did you deal with some of your couples that went in different directions? Because I can tell you,
as a
married woman, if Dan had fought me on this stuff, because he didn't. Right. I mean, he said he thanks me now.
Yeah,
because
course,
he figures,
yeah.
You know, he didn't have the time. He's busy with mm-hmm. this new business he just bought into. He's doing all these things. He's like, if they had said it was fine, he probably would have gotten it. He's like, if it weren't for you, I probably would have gotten it. And those myocarditis concerns mm-hmm. with athletes dropping dead. I mean, my husband's very fit. He
very
actually
athletic.
Is a candidate for that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So what did you...
Well, that's what I wanted to talk. Let me interrupt because I'm going to answer your question without you having to finish it. So even today still, with the couples or the families, I'm starting to do more family work, which is really cool.
That's amazing.
Got my first family that connected
so
back
needed.
In. It's so awesome.
Yeah.
And they were saying like, we can't get insurance for this. I'm like, I know. I understand. That's okay. We'll work through it, right? Because mm-hmm. it's so fun. You and I have talked about on this show many times how important it is to get family dynamic at the same time. Anyway, what I was going to say, so 4 years since... the COVID
we're in the 4 year anniversary.
We're right in that period. For all the couples I've worked with, that's probably at least 150 in that 4 years, maybe more. Mm-hmm. COVID's impacted all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So to act like not one of them was affected mm-hmm. relationally, family, maritally, businesses. You know, I work with lots of couples where the business got shut down, the small business, and they couldn't. Another couple just lost their bakery. And the whole thing's in disarray, right? They're trying to figure out when did it start? Right then. And they couldn't recover. And so, it's that. So to say I'm in my own locus of control for the internal process of the crisis work, but the crisis work I'm doing is all impacted by COVID.
Right.
Automatically, especially the young people. Right. We know what the research says. Yeah. Thank you for that generations book again. I recommend it to everyone. What's her name again?
Dr. Jean Twenge, T-W-E-N-G-E.
Yeah, she's fantastic. That book is incredible. It's so long. So be sink in if you're going to sink in. And there's so much research and grasp. We're going to try to get her on. Tim's going to try to get her on. She's fantastic. But I just finished the Gen Z part, and now I'm into the polar part, which is what she's calling the newest generation.
Oh.
The younger ones. But talking about, again, that demarcation line, I heard you and Tim talking about it between 2010. No, Warren was talking it.
Yeah,
Warren. 2010, 2012, where all of life shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And the cell phone is a big, big part of that. She mm-hmm. gives such great, clear, concrete research mm-hmm. on the spiking of mm-hmm. mental health issues. Phone first, COVID second.
Mm-hmm.
And together, that was like an atom bomb mm-hmm. of mental health. So I see that so much with the families, with the couples and their children, sometimes stuck in that age, like 13 to 20 window where they just can't find themselves. They can't individuate. They can't feel... you know, Erickson's stages of identity and mm-hmm. strength of person. And so, yes, it's impacted everybody. It's traumatic. It's unstabling. And so how do we find that? How do we move forward? I think that's what we're talking about.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
And that's why we want to focus on this more coming up. Our listeners will start to hear us dive into this a lot more specifically.
Yeah. And I'm glad we had the opportunity to do a little 4 years post 2 weeks to stop the spread, because to ignore it is what I feel some people, again, mm-hmm. I'll get personal again. I'll get vulnerable. I feel that a lot of people who weren't COVID dissidents, traumatized as they are, dealing with that trauma differently mm-hmm. and going, you know what? Okay, it's over. Kids are back in school. Mm-hmm. The small businesses are back open, although we know many of them will never.
That's
they're done.
Right.
They're done.
That's right.
Walmart's doing great, though. Target's doing great. Because, you know, you couldn't get COVID at the big box store.
No, you couldn't. It's only the small store.
Only the little small mom and pops.
Don't get me cynical again. I know Tim likes when I get cynical, but that's pretty funny.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous to think about, right? It's just like, that's so crazy.
But then that makes my mind go, mm-hmm. what was that about?
Yeah.
Because it never made sense. It was not logical. It was not rational.
Yeah.
Oh, you could go to the restaurant. When you walk in, have the mask on. Sit down. Pull that thing off for 2.5 hours if you're going to have your dinner.
You're fine.
Oh, but then what happened to me in Chicago?
I don't know if I remember that story.
No, you don't. This one. I was with Dina.
Maybe.
And I get up to go to the bathroom. And I didn't put the mask back on. Because once again, Dean and I were not going to give each other COVID for the 2 hours we sat at the table. But once I went up to go to the ladies' room, you better put the mask back on. That's when the COVID will get you.
Yeah.
Because it knows you're walking in the restaurant. So things like that that never made sense, illogical. Now I'm angry about that.
Yeah.
And my friends just want me to get over it. Move on.
Yeah. And sometimes to add the spiritual piece, righteous anger is what the Lord uses to change his people and change culture. So, right, we know Jesus was angry many times, but this differentiation you and I talked about with Warren at lunch today, thank you, Ross, our favorite Culver's manager, what we're talking about with Ross at Culver's is we can't get locked into the anger, fear part, anger, truth part, anger, faith part. Yes, anger, fear part, that'll start to eat us alive. And that's what COVID, I think, did too in the mental health spectrum. It got everybody so fear-oriented in general, let alone about COVID, but then became, you're Republican, I can't like you. You're a Democrat, I can't like you, right? It just became this whole polarization of affect and effect that fear took over, and who wins in fear? Satan, right? There is a demonic issue here on the theological side for all of this, that when Satan gets our entire country, our entire families, our communities, based in fear, we cannot be joyful. We cannot be an abundant life. It'll capsize you.
And the fear was on both sides.
Yes.
As I talked about with Kate, my friend who was willing to talk about, although she was not at all a dissident. She was on the other side of the experience. She was willing to talk to me about it. Mm-hmm. And of course, I understood that people who got jabbed and boosted and wore masks and still today in the airport, you'll see them. I understand they're coming from a place of fear. Mm-hmm. And I would hope they would understand that me being skeptical and not trusting these entities that they trusted.
Yeah.
And I don't trust these authorities that they trusted, that I had a fear that I've been taught that pharma doesn't always have my best interest at heart. They might have their bottom dollar at heart. That might be their motivation. So I had a fear, which I thought was reasonable and rational. But to your point, everyone's keyed up on fear.
Yeah.
And then because your fear is threatening my stance, then you're evil and selfish. Yeah. You didn't take the jab, so you're wanting to kill grandma.
Yeah, fear personifies into altercations or separation or isolation.
And vilification.
It always manifests that way, right? Think of anything we get afraid of. Does that create unity? Does that create connection? Does it create intimacy? It doesn't. In marriages, relationships, family, politics, any of it. So I think, again, this theological aspect of the fear, I was asked a ton early on, is this part of the end times? Right? Valid question. I was listening to my favorite end times pastors, David Jeremiah, some of those guys that really speak extensively on it. And my own theological understanding and revelation, I'm like, I don't think so, but it's still the pangs, the beginning birth pangs, they call it in scripture. So certainly there. And if we look at the long run effect of COVID, did it help our country? Did it help the world grow in love, grow in peace? No, heck no.
No.
It went the opposite way. So there we can say, yes, this is dispensational theory about what's coming. Fear, loathing, isolation, attack. And even think about the recognition of what happens to us in relationship. If my experience with somebody I trust, let's say there's a professor I loved when we were growing up, and then you had him and you hated him, right? Well, who's to say he's not a good professor because I loved him, or who's to say he's a crappy professor because you didn't? So our experience for the same thing can create differentiation. Can we talk through it?
Right.
Or do we just say, Karen doesn't know what she's doing, even though you were the good student, right? I say, Karen has no idea. Professors hate her all the time anyway, so what's the big deal, right? So we make up these excuses and these rationalizations that aren't based on truth. They're based on perception. They're based on experience. And so that's why we have to have the room to talk about them. And that's what I think upset you so much too, is that even some of your best friends that are usually great communicators all of a sudden didn't want to talk with you anymore. You're like, I just want to talk through this. I just want to say what I've learned, what I've understood. And my perception and my experience, I'm a researcher, and then to get that shut down blocks the very things we've dedicated our whole professional career to. Relationships, understanding, shaping, growing, developing, strengthening ourselves as people. And I think in this case, the fact that I stayed really clinically busy the whole time actually helped me with some of that exterior chaos. From sinking in too deep, especially when my own home was flooded with massive testosterone during the lockdowns. It was like a zoo, right? It felt like people were swinging off the rafters, and myself included, right? I don't do well getting trapped in this room in the studio for 25 minutes and it's hot, let alone my own house for 3 weeks and no one can leave. But, based on how Angie and I were, we were leaving. Yeah. Angie was still going to the grocery store. She was like, right. I'm going out. Right. And I'm like, yeah, you go, babe. I'm not worried about it. You just go home. Right.
Well, the grocery store was essential, but the bakery wasn't. And now Jewel is thriving and that
bakery's gone.
Bakery's gone.
Yeah.
And to me, that righteous anger comes up. It was never logical. Mm-hmm. It's hurting the little guy.
Yeah.
The big businesses. And again, we were also schooled to not trust these big businesses mm-hmm. that are corporations that oftentimes are very impersonal and do not have their own workers' best interest in mind. And for people who claim to be for the downtrodden and the vulnerable, and for them not to be as outraged about that as me, that makes me angry too.
Sure, absolutely.
Like, don't say that you're for the little guy. You're not. Right. You didn't care.
Or jump in and figure it out.
Yes. Right. Or join me a little bit here. And and it felt very much like you said, like people who we had oftentimes aligned on many values, it seemed like this. Because I do feel it was just, oh, you're here or there. It's Trump's fault or it's Fauci's fault. And
it got twisted.
It got real twisted.
And anytime it gets that twisted, we can theologically say Satan's at work.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not trying to blame it all on Satan, but that influence is substantial. And if we're not prayed up and we're not aware of that, again, aware of that truth. Here we go again, talking about the truth. We're not aware of that truth. It's going
to
impact more.
Well, I had to, as a Christian, moving through this, as I've been sharing quite vulnerably, I think, today, I had to at times just take a step back and go, we wrestle not with flesh and blood. Mm-hmm. This is not about neighbor to neighbor. This is about something that is way beyond even what I can comprehend. But being the way that we were raised to be, I'm the type of person who's like going to keep trying to figure it out, going to keep doing the research, going to keep listening to people. And I think I have to work on the silver lining, and maybe I invite others who feel some of the same angst as I do. The silver lining has been, though this was politicized and polarized and made a right and a left thing, which never made sense either, by the way, because it used to be the left that hated pharma. The left were the hippies that wanted all the herbs and the organic.
Now it's switched.
And now it's switched. Now the left is like, pharma, do it.
That might be a little extreme.
No, it's not. No.
Not every leftist is cheering for pharma. I know what you're saying.
The leftists?
Yeah. I didn't say the leftist. I said the left.
Okay.
There's a difference between left and leftist, right? Just like you can be right and not a rightist.
Well, we have liberals and we have conservatives and then we have leftists. That's what I'm saying. Okay. And I feel like if you're that far over.
Yeah, you might be cheering.
Oh, I think they're cheering. Right. They probably have stocks in Pfizer. I mean, there's probably a monetary gain. Who knows? But for many dissidents who felt that none of this was making sense as they understood these values, freedom, censorship used to be, again, the ACLU used to be like, you can say whatever you want. I may hate what you say, but you have the right to say it. And here they were for censorship of doctors who were dissidents.
Yeah.
But those of us who felt like none of this is making sense anymore, we have found. And so I listened to a lot of Glenn Greenwald would be one who was considered the darling of the left for forever, but he's super pro free speech and he's jabbed, but he wasn't for the mandates and that sort of Russell Brand is another one who used to be this kind of hippy dippy, like crazy star. I listen to him all the time because he's just about freedom. And so there's a lot of Matt Taibbi would be another one. Michael Schellenberger. These are people who probably I'm pro-life. They're probably not pro-life, but we're in this space of we're pro freedom, pro, you can do what you want with your medical decisions for you and your family. We are pro people being able to say whatever the heck they want to say. And so I think there is some common ground. People are finding each other. And that could be a very powerful force moving forward because we're saying, you know what? These labels don't make sense anymore. They were probably not even helpful to define ourselves as left or right in the first place. Let's just all be about these common values that maybe became more apparent through COVID.
Yeah. And I think democracy in itself, right, is about the differentiation of the people, but everyone has the equal responsibility, equal rights, equal connection. And these dividers just make that.
Right.
It goes against our very freedoms as a country we start in the first place.
And I've invited my friend, the one she will talk to me about when she comes at me with things, because she does. That comes at me. Maybe that's a little strong.
Yeah.
But she'll send me things and I'm thinking, what does she really want me to do with this? And I just remind her, I don't think that the left-right issue is what we really should be focusing on. I think we need to be looking up because I think it's more the common person, like you were speaking, those of us who just want to have a normal country that we thought was normal. I don't know if the country we grew up in was not normal anymore, but we need to be looking at the powers that be, the big entities that seem to be wanting to take more of a heavy-handed approach over to how we live our lives. That's who we need to focus. And the AOC versus Matt Gaetz in Congress fighting, that's not useful. What's useful is us as humanity, as Americans, looking at those forces that are coming, trying to my mind, take a huge control of our rights. We'd love to connect with you further via our weekly newsletter. Joining the Love and Life family gets you first access to bonus content and flash sale pricing for books and consultations.
And when you sign up, you'll receive Karen's Empowered Dating Playbook or my Empowered Marriage Playbook. Head over to loveandlifemedia.com to join the Love and Life family. And in crisis response or PTSD healing, we have to get back to that locus of control that's internal. Even if we feel called to move now into an external area of some sort, as you felt called to do and righteously moving in, we still have to make sure we take whatever disturbance or unsettling that's happened to us. This is like core identity stuff, not politically. So we have to be able to take this piece then and say, well, this will be my purpose through this or my purpose in this or my end goal to work towards. Otherwise, it feels so chaotic and so scrambled. We can't get centered, even if we know we're in a good place emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually. It makes us feel scattered, right? And it makes us, that's the word you used lately, so I thought I'd use it.
I said that many times in the Tim Elliott Karen text chat. So,
but that really makes sense to me as a crisis therapist, that there's almost like too much swirling.
I'm quite scattered, yes.
Right, so there's too much swirling, and so trying to find at least a somewhat linear path to education, information, growth, development. And that's part of the reason we're going to do more content on this. Right?
Yeah.
It's partly for you, but it's mainly for our audience, right? It's for, so we can teach and share and I can give theological insights as we go and try to catch up with the knowledge you and Tim have that I'm behind on, but we're just walking through it together. And
we got you. Don't worry.
But I think it's important. I think for all of us, you're just being vulnerable enough to say, hey, this has impacted me pretty significantly. I need to make a stronger, cohesive movement in it so it doesn't make me feel unsettled and destabilized.
Because we were raised to make it happen, take charge. So if you feel something, you go and act upon it. If you feel that it's the right thing to do, that you are advocating, and it's certainly, like I said, as a psychologist, I'm trained, I'm a professional in this field. If I don't take action, then I feel that it's not what I'm called to do, but also to take action in a way that feels purposeful and can make an impact.
Alignment.
Right.
Congruence. Right. Because, you know, I've supported you all the time. Like, if you feel led to protest, go protest.
Oh, yeah.
But then when you'd call me and go, okay, I screamed that guy. I don't feel good about that. I just really let loose. And I'm like, all right, let's talk through it. Right. And say, well, the anger's fine. Screamed. The righteousness is fine. The petitioning's fine. That's American.
Yeah.
That's who we are as a country. You getting so angry that you just wail on this guy. That's not you. Right. No. Maybe you and I in a fight, that's you when we were little. But
it was that kind of rage. It was like little care rage. Coming for Elliot rage. It was. Yeah.
Teeth out, claws out, feet out.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So that's what we're talking about. We're like, if this is how you're moved and convicted and we know it's true for you and spiritually true, act on it. How do we stay aligned with who we are?
Right.
Right. How do we not become something we're not or feel so victimized by the...
That we lose our optimism.
Exactly.
We lose
the very
core.
Joy that makes you you.
Right.
Yeah.
And the threat, and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah.
We'll need some prayer here. But the threat is that you live all these years with one personality, and now this, like, I'm not as joyful, maybe. Maybe I'm not as optimistic. Maybe I'm more cynical, and then I'll lose all my friends because they liked Happy Karen.
Yes. Boy, that's another whole episode.
But we'll tease that up for the next episode.
But you are still yourself, but there is an element of you is a little different. And that's what massive trauma does. Right. And so I think the trauma from this was more personal because you got in there in the weeds and said, I'm not going to just sit, lay back. And because of that, it became more raw, it became more to your face, right? Or in your head or in your heart, in your soul. So I'm proud of you for doing it, but it has had its impact.
Oh, yeah. But you still like me, luckily.
Absolutely. And I'm not afraid to call you out when I'm like, hey, you're a little over the top at the moment with not what you're researching or what you're pursuing is truth. And the books you've given me have been awesome. With yourself, right? I know you so well that if you're like stuck in the fear of the anger too much, I'm like, that's not quite you.
Mom says I'm a lot. She told Dan, she's like, well, she's a lot. That's right. Hey, Dan must like it.
That's right. It's okay. That's how we were raised too, to be a lot. I know. Dad was teaching us, you be a presence in that room. Right. You make sure they know who you are. He did give me some mixed messages when he was almost proud of my rambunctiousness or me telling teachers off, you know, or standing up and taking my shirt off in the class, whatever. He had that mixed, like, he was kind of proud of me.
You were hot. That might sound like you were like a Chippendales dancer. No, you might, you better clarify.
I have massive heat issues. You were, yeah. Just like this place is making me crazy.
He was overheated in our middle school that was this old mansion that had no AC.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't like I was a...
You were like,
No, I was like, I can't take it. I just started taking my clothes off. And I was throwing notes out the window saying, help, we're trapped in
Latin. You're stressing mom out again. You already traumatized her earlier today with some self-disclosure she didn't need.
Oh, yeah. Right. Sorry, let me pray for it. Lord, thank you for this time. Thank you for this depth of conversation. And Lord, COVID sucked. And it was extremely difficult. And it's had impact that... we'll still be feeling for generations. Thank you, Lord, for Karen's heart and her passion and her convictions and her righteous indignation and how she continually stood up and read and researched and picketed and petitioned when she knew things were not appropriate and not right. And Lord, continue to help her in this feeling of scattered unsettledness to find those other purposes, those other freedoms, and using her gifts as a teacher, an educator, a researcher, a writer, to promote and share truth. And we hope, Lord, our podcast will continue to do that, especially as we walk into some of these details and some of our guests we bring that'll be pretty specific and pointed. And we pray, Lord, that this honors and glorifies you. And we thank you for Karen's vulnerability, producer Tim, and even our mama in the hot podcast studio with us right now, Lord. And we thank you for parents that raise us to not be against our government, but just to question things and make sure things are right and true and honest and sincere. So we thank you, Lord. We can do that together and discuss this live and present it in this manner. Amen.
Thanks for the therapy. It felt good.
Love and Life is produced by Tim May and hosts and executive producer, Dr. Karen Anderson-Abril.